AM 1290 and 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio WHIO and Sim Trainer Indoor Range and Firearms Training Center present Shooting from the Hip. It's straight talk about firearms, ammunition, self-defense, when and where you can carry, legislation, and legal issues. All about safety, training, and so much more. Your hosts are Jeff Pedro and Mark Avery. Jeff is a 24-year veteran police officer, currently assigned City of Kettering Detective, and owner and lead instructor at Sim Trainer. Mark is a retired Air Force officer, senior staff instructor at Sim Trainer, and NRA-certified instructor in multiple disciplines. They're here to bring to the microphone the truth about guns. Join them by calling 457-1290. Now, Shooting from the Hip. On AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center, located at 2031 Dryden Road across from DP&L in Moraine. You can reach us by phone at 937-293-3914 or on the web at www.sim-trainer.com. I'm Jeff Pedro in with Mark Avery this afternoon. We're in between one of our marathon first shots weekends. We just finished up one of our first shots classes, and we're here at the show, and then we're going to go back and have an evening session. Both are full, as has typically been the case for the last several months, and I'm going to have Mark just tell you a little bit about those first shots classes for those of you that are new to the radio show and maybe want to get interested, because about, I'm going to guess, anywhere from a third to half the people there get information about us on the radio show, and it's just good to have that information and find out a little bit about how you can get involved in shooting sports.
First Shots is an introduction to firearms that's sponsored by the National Shooting Sports Foundation. They started the program about 4 years ago, and we've been part of it since December of 2006. We bring probably up to 20 people in a class, and most of the classes that we've had lately, we've had to have an extra class because the class would fill a couple of weeks or more before the class start date. So now we've even started scheduling mid-month classes on a Thursday evening. And the next one will be in July. We couldn't do one this month because our concealed carry class is in the middle of the month, so there wasn't time for it. The First Shots class is really for people who've never handled a firearm before, or at least haven't handled a handgun before. We take care of all the supplies and everything. We provide all the equipment, the training, eye and ear protection, the handguns, ammunition, targets, everything. So it's a very easy class to get started with. You don't have to do anything to get ready for it. There's no prerequisite. And you come to the class, and we cover pretty much everything. We start with firearm safety, because that really is a key to making sure that everybody has a good time, is that nobody gets injured. So we want to make sure that everybody understands the four basic rules of firearm safety, that you treat every firearm as a loaded firearm, that you are aware of where you're pointing the gun, and that you always keep it pointed in a safe direction, that you keep your finger off the trigger until you've aligned your sights on a safe target and you have made the decision to fire, and finally, that you're aware of your target and what is beyond it. We cover those in some detail and explain why that's important and all the different things that are necessary associated with that. And then we talk about the firearm that we use. In our class, we use the Ruger Mark III semi-automatic handgun. It's a .22 caliber pistol, semi-automatic pistol, and it has a 10-round magazine, so that works real well with our courses of fire that we use. We explain how that firearm works and the names of the different parts of the gun, and then we talk a little bit about how you place an accurate shot, grip, sight alignment, and trigger control. And then we go out into the range, and everybody gets an opportunity to practice with a box of ammunition. And when we leave the range, we come back out into the classroom and do a little bit of wrap-up. But more often than not, in fact, pretty much every time, everybody's walking out of that range with big grins on their faces, because it is such a great class. It's a lot of fun to teach. We have several people that join with us. Jeff and I typically run the class, and then we have additional instructors that we have at Sim Trainer who come out and help us in the range and make sure that everything is handled very safely, but also to give plenty of personal attention to everybody who's shooting. So everyone has a good experience, and we work through some of the typical startup shooting problems and people that have there are some things about shooting that are a little counterintuitive. And so we help people work through those and give them a good opportunity to learn the basics of handling a handgun. It's a lot of fun, and we get a lot of people who come for their first time ever shooting to come through that first shots class.
I had the spouse of a police officer that was in class today, and the police officer just came along for his own personal observation. He's retired after 25 plus years of faithful service. And he came up to me halfway through the class and after the class and said, "Man, this is great. I couldn't have done this. My wife would not have paid nearly as much attention to me as she did to you guys. And this is the way to do it. And she's on her way. And when can I sign her up for a private lesson and then get her in here and shoot on a regular basis?" And he was real excited about it. And I want to remind our listeners that first shots, as with a lot of things we do down at the range, are designed for all people from all walks of life. I looked at today's class roster and I saw we had a family of four, mother, father, and two children. We had an elderly female, 70, 75 years of age, who at the end of class actually came up and registered for the basic class because she's going to go on and advance her firearms proficiency and continue on. We had just a husband and a wife, a boyfriend and a girlfriend. We had a couple neighbors who found out from other people who took class before. In the past, we've done small groups and large groups, and we can pretty much customize that class to meet your individual small group or large group needs because it is so dynamic. It's very basic, but at the same time, you leave there with a very good core set of basic skills that, as I tell people all the time, and I know Mark feels the same way, once you complete first shots, you basically have the essence of what it takes to get involved in the shooting sports. You have all the basics that you need. You literally don't need anything else. You've learned about firearm safety. You've learned about the basic functional operation of a 22 pistol. And just from that, you can go on to recreational shooting, and then you can progress into some additional training or additional recreational shooting using other caliber pistols, and you can even move into rifles because you've got that good foundation. And I think it's so wonderful because so often in the past, people say, well, you know, I go to the gun store and I look at the guns and I just pick the one I like or the one that the person brings to the counter, and that's the one I buy. And I come to the range and I start shooting. Well, the problem is they don't know how to shoot. They don't know how to load. They don't know how to functionally operate. They don't know how to do it safely. They don't know how to tell someone else that they might want to share the sport with to get involved and have a good time. And that's the beauty of First Shots, is that we go over those basic protocols and everybody feels comfortable when they get out of that class that they can handle it themselves.
Well, the other thing is that we had, I think, three family groups today in this class and this morning, and shooting is a great family sport because it's something that everybody can do at their own level. Everybody can have a good time at it. And frankly, there's a real big equalizer here because even the younger members of the family and the older members of the family all have the same opportunity. There's not a separate, extra skill level or extra strength that's required. It's just something that's real good for a family to come out and do, and they can do together, and maybe a little competition between the family members, but a lot of support as well. And it's a great opportunity. Everybody can come out and have a good time.
That's the beauty of it. They all came out today. I looked at the kids and they were a little bit excited and at the same time anticipatory. The father was kind of guiding them along, but once we got them past the first string of 10 shots, they got into it and then they started competing amongst themselves, and it turned out to be a great, great day.
Let's go out to the phones and we'll talk to Kelly, who's in Vandalia and calling the show. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Question I have, I just came from the Huber Heights Library, and they have a sign up that says no guns. And normally in Vandalia, there's no sign up. And I just assumed that the county buildings weren't covered as a prohibited area. Now, I know if a regular store puts up a sign, it's no longer a crime if you ignore the sign. You know, they can press you for trespassing. But I was wondering how to deal with this library issue.
Well, let me correct a couple of things. First, if the sign is up on the door, regardless of whether it's a government building or not, it's criminal trespass if you go through that. The only thing that changed with the law in 2008 was that if you go into a parking lot, it's no longer a crime. That's only civil trespass. But if you go into a building that's posted, then you've committed criminal trespass. Now, the question, of course, then becomes whether or not they want to prosecute, But that sign does carry the force of law, and it doesn't have to be the official sign off the Attorney General's website. It can be just a piece of cardboard that says no guns and duct tape to the door. That provides adequate notice. So If there's a sign up on a store that does provide, there is legal background for that, that does carry the force of law. Now, with respect to government buildings, all government-owned buildings and occupied buildings, now that's opposed to someplace like a rest area that's not an occupied office building, but any place where people have offices, that is automatically off limits. And they are supposed to post a sign, but as a licensed person who has a license to carry a concealed handgun, we're supposed to know that government buildings are off limits. Now, I disagree with that. That is the law, unfortunately. So I don't think that the government should place anything off limits if it's under government control because of two things. First, we have the United States Second Amendment to the Constitution, which guarantees the right to keep and bear arms. But we also have the Ohio Constitution, which guarantees the same right. And so, frankly, I think it's wrong that Ohio has put government buildings off limits. But until we get that changed, it's important to understand that government buildings are off limits, and that includes government-run libraries. A private library, that they have their own choice, but government libraries, like a city library or a county library, those are definitely off limits.
Okay, can I follow up with that?
Real quickly.
Question is, if it's a county or a city or a state building, it's all covered under no guns.
That's correct.
Okay, so what kind of penalties if you go into, say, Walmart if they have a no-gun sign? Not saying that they do, but what kind of risk would you be taking?
It's a criminal trespass. It's a misdemeanor. I believe it's a first-degree misdemeanor.
Okay. All right, appreciate your time, though. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's take our first break for the hour. We will be back in just a few minutes after paying some bills. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
America, this is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. I just want to expand a little bit on a comment made by Kelly just before the break. He was talking about the difference between going into a government building with a concealed holder license and carrying a gun, and then going into private premises that just has a sign posted. And relative to the second part of that, that is a misdemeanor of the fourth degree, punishable by up to $250 fine, and I believe up to 30 days in jail as a maximum penalty, just to let you know. But regardless of that, whether no matter what the fine would be, no matter what the time in jail, you want to avoid those kinds of circumstances. And until the laws are changed, and I think this is going to be an evolution. And we talked to several people over the last year that we've had on the show, including a couple of attorneys, and they say this is a slow process. We're 6 years into it. We've made progress. I think it's been good progress. Not as much as I'd hoped by now. And I know Mark in a little bit will probably give you a little update on Senate Bill 239 and where it stands at the present time. But we would hope some of these things would move a little bit faster. But we have to be diligent, we have to be patient, and we have to let people know how we feel. And one other thing I want to encourage people to do, when places put up those signs, I think you should voice your opinion, especially the private entities, whether it's a grocery store, just a hardware store, whatever the case might be, and you're dissatisfied with that, remember, you have the right not to do business with them. And let them know why you're not going to do business with them. And the times being the way they are, I think they're gonna pay attention. I'm not so sure that if one person does it, that they're going to change their policy. But if 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 people do it, I think they're going to have to give serious consideration to their decision, because it really has no negative bearing to take the darn thing down. Matter of fact, I would argue, as a law enforcement officer, as a proponent of the Second Amendment, that it's to their advantage that they take the sign down, because it actually makes it a safer environment. And I think they just need to be educated. A lot of them have been misinformed by their legal counsel, by their attorney, or by their friend who said, hey, I heard on in a local newspaper that you should put this sign up, and how ridiculous those sources of information are.
Well, one other source for some of that misinformation is insurance companies, and some of the retailers put signs up because their insurance company says, if you don't put that sign up, then you're increasing your liability, which is not true, but that's what they say. And because that's what they believe, then they're going to either not cover them or they're going to change their rates up. And with the cost of insurance being what it is, most of the companies are going to do what the insurance company says to do. And while I understand that they have to do that, they really need to look for another insurance company. And there are many insurance companies that don't rate negatively the fact that you allow firearms to be carried in your facility. And I've found that if you talk to the owners or the managers and you present the facts, and there's plenty of facts available, you can go to Ohioans for Concealed Carry website. You can go to the Buckeye Firearms Association website. There's all kinds of information available that will provide the business owner and manager more data that will help them make a reasonable decision that says, yeah, actually, I don't want to exclude the best part of society from being a customer in my store. Let's go back out to the phones and talk to Ed in Medway. Ed, welcome to the show.
Yes, I was Wednesday's Columbus Dispatch had a letter to the editor about Senate Bill 239, and they were claiming that off-duty police officers can be armed in the bar and still drink, and I was wondering if that's a true truism.
Well, there's no specific exemption for off-duty police officers, and what departments typically do with their policies, separate from law, is they tell officers that they should act in a responsible way when they're carrying off-duty. So the general answer to your question is there is no specific prohibition.
It doesn't state one way or the other.
Except for the fact that they shall not be intoxicated and or impaired.
Right.
Now, the issue of impairment intoxication is often subject to debate, but the bottom line is police officers are not governed by the same set of rules that civilians who have CHLs are.
Well, yeah, the letter mentioned not to exceed the OA blood level and alcohol level, and it also mentions that it seems strange that the same police organization against us having concealed carry in a bar doesn't apply to them, too.
Well, let me clarify that just a little bit. It's
okay.
Not the same police organization. The Fraternal Order of Police, and particularly Mark Drum, who actually was quoted in the Columbus newspaper last week, and we talked about that a little bit last week.
Right.
He's not a police officer.
Oh.
And so although he's a member of the police union and is speaking essentially what appears to be on their behalf, most of the rank and file police officers aren't going to agree with him. And of course, I'm sitting across the table from one in here, Jeff Pedro, and the reason he opened Sim Trainer was to provide civilians the same quality level of training that police officers get, because civilians can be just as responsible and have just as much need to be able to defend themselves effectively. So just because the leadership of the FOP says one thing, that doesn't necessarily mean that applies to all police officers. That's hardly what they believe.
And I might add, you might check what the president of Mexico said about his. He said that all the firearms he traced were from America, but he didn't say if that was all the firearms he had.
Yeah, we'll talk about that after the break. We're about ready to go into the bottom of the hour news break, and we'll head over to Charles Van Sant in the news center. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Randy Rogers from Team Glock, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro in for Shooting from the Hip. As you've noticed, the Storm Center is now turned on, and so you'll be hearing chimes every few minutes. That's because there's quite a bit of color in the radar picture, so we'll be keeping an eye on that, and if something serious happens, they'll break in from the news center and let you know what's going on. It's about 37 after the hour, 38 after the hour, and we'll get back to some stuff that's going on. Jeff, let's add a little bit to the last caller.
Yeah, a couple things I just want to clarify. First of all, Mark Drum, the individual, was quoted in the Columbus Dispatch as being against restaurant carry and a variety of other issues. I reached out to him this past week by telephone, by email, and a follow-up phone call, and have not heard back from him. I don't suspect that I will, but I want to encourage all people out there, whether you're a pro, anti-gun, brother, sister, law enforcement officer, whoever you might be, to call us at 457-1290. When I developed the concept for this radio show and we were talking about what we wanted to accomplish, one of the main things was we want to promote the truth. And I think one of the biggest problems that exists out there is there's a lot of misinformation that's being distributed because people assume just because an individual has an affiliation with a particular organization, that's the truth and that represents the entire organization's belief system. Well, I'm going to tell you just on basis of what I know to be true, the police officers that I talk to, and they are many throughout the Miami Valley because of the position that I serve in and the meetings that I go to and the people that I talk to and the similarities and backgrounds and interest in firearms, that I've never heard that opinion expressed by any of my brother or sister law enforcement officers, and that's the opinion that restaurant carry would be detrimental to the good of mankind is in essence what Mark was quoted as alluding to last week. So I want to encourage anybody to give us a call. This is an open forum for debate. I just ask that you support your claim or present your argument in an educated fashion and have some statistics or information to back it, because we want to get the truth out there. And if we can't, we won't necessarily refute what you have to say. We might disagree with what you have to say, and then we may debate what you're saying. But we want to open the forum to that kind of exchange so that we can get the truth out there and get people to know what's going on. And along those lines, the caller mentioned that there's talk about the legal limit as far as restaurant carry is going, the difference between being drunk or intoxicated and impaired being 0.08. Remember that the 0.08 level applies strictly to operation or being in physical control of a motor vehicle. Has nothing to do and isn't even a guideline for establishing a limit for intoxication to where an individual would be able to carry a gun into a establishment. I believe the current language in the law is so that they are not, quote, consuming alcoholic beverages, unquote, or are not impaired. I personally think the safer way to get it passed would be not consuming. I think that would be pretty easy, that if you're not consuming, you carry your gun. There's no reason to believe that the individual is going to be impaired to the extent that they could not make a good decision if a deadly force situation presented itself. I think that's the easiest way to get the bill passed. The issue of impairment, I think, is going to be a little bit more difficult. Mark, you're a civilian. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think that impairment is a standard that needs to be included. I don't think it actually says anything about that specifically within this bill. The law does say you can't be intoxicated. And if you know, if that would, I don't think the word impaired is used, but that's the same implication. And frankly, it's a felony if you're carrying a firearm under intoxication. So, you know, that question is already answered. I kind of disagree that we should say that anybody who's law-abiding citizen who has proven themselves to be responsible should not be allowed to have a drink with dinner. That's my personal opinion. I agree with you that it's going to be a lot easier to get through the Senate and the House and signed by the governor if we go ahead and put that exclusion in there. Like all the other things that have been in the concealed carry law, there have been some exclusions and some restrictions that I disagreed with, but a lot of people disagreed with. In fact, in the first iteration of Ohio's concealed carry law, there was some really stupid stuff in there, but the concealed carry community said, fine, go ahead, put that in there. After we've had this thing in place for a year or so and everybody sees that none of these dire circumstances are going to occur, we can get the law changed. And that has happened twice, both changes to the concealed carry law, one in 2007, which got rid of the Buckeye Tuck, having to have your firearm exposed and visible, plainly visible when you're in a motor vehicle. And then the change in 2008, which did a lot of things, including the Castle Doctrine. All of the changes that we've had so far to the law have been positive. If this bill passes, that will also be a positive change.
Absolutely.
And I think that if we go beyond that, we can consider changing things again. We had our rights taken away from us incrementally. We're not going to get them back all at once. It's just not going to happen that way.
Right. And I think that if we look at the overall motivation behind the restaurant carry, it's personal safety. Bottom line is, it's personal safety and not eliminating certain areas where you're just as likely to be a victim of an attack than other areas. So I think that if we follow that line of reasoning and we accept the fact that most of the pro-gun people, the CHL people, are reasonable people, and we've given a lot. We've made a lot of concessions over the last 6 years. We know that it's a long process. We're in it for the long haul. I personally would like to hear from our listeners to see what they feel about. Are we willing to go ahead and give up the consumption in a restaurant to get the bill passed and later on make the modification? Because the nice thing about the pro-gunners and the CHL proponents is that all of our predictions pretty much come true, whereas the anti-gunners, none of their predictions come true. So we stand on firm ground. They stand on not even thin ice, broken ice, and they fall through the cracks on a regular basis.
Yeah, and all the arguments that they make are based on emotion, and all of the arguments we make are based on fact. We have the data to back up what we say. And this is not the first state to have concealed carry in a bar or any other restaurant that serves alcohol. There are already over 40, I think it's 42 other states that have concealed carry in bars. Arizona just added it. That was a restriction last year that's now been removed. And so we can look to the laws in the other states and the experience of these other states who've had this in place for a long time and say, okay, give me the example where this occurred, this terrible, dire consequence that you are saying, Mr. Violence Policy Center, Mr. Brady Campaign, Mr. Ohio Coalition, or Ms. Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence. Show us the facts. I can show you the facts where that didn't happen, but that's simply not an accurate way to deal with the discussion. And it's very difficult to make a logical argument to someone who has an emotional commitment to their position. I mean, it's very difficult to deal with that. We're needing to take our last break of the hour. So Jeff and I are going to disappear for a few minutes, pay a few bills, tell you about the weather that's coming up. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro in with Shooting from the Hip. Let's go right out to the phones, and we'll talk to James in Kettering, who has a question for us. James, welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
We're doing great.
Well, my question is, recently I've seen signs go up for gas stations and at a local chain grocery store that says you're not allowed to carry a firearm in this liquor establishment. And I understood that is that if they serve open containers in a grocery store and in a gas station, don't do that.
That is true. Gas stations don't serve in an open container. They do have a liquor license, but it's not the kind of liquor license for open serving in an open container. Class D and 6 and 8 don't apply. But I know that there are a couple of stores, retail stores, that do wine tastings. And last check, they had a liquor license that did allow for serving in open containers. And so that may be why they're posting the sign.
Okay.
And unfortunately, if they have that kind of a license, the way the law is written, that means that they do that you are excluded from carry, and that's one of the things that that the legislation currently before the House, Senate Bill 239, would change, and that would mean that you no longer have the chance of being committing a felony for existence while armed without having done anything else.
Okay, so if I go into the gas station and, you know, God forbid somebody would see it, you know, I keep it concealed, but you know what I'm saying? If they get mad about that, they call the police on me, I'm not at fault, correct?
Well, no. If they have a sign that doesn't say no firearms and it just parrots the law about what the law says regarding a license, a liquor license, then yeah, that doesn't mean you've done anything. But if they have a sign that says no firearms, that's a little bit different because that does carry the force of law.
No, I do understand. All right, thank you. I appreciate your guys' show.
Hey, thanks very much for giving the show a call. Let's go out and talk to Brian in Dayton. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hi, how you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Great. I had a question concerning the Bill 239.
Okay, it's a Senate Bill 239 for restaurant carry.
Yes. I was listening to you folks earlier say that one of you guys said that it would be better if it was no consumption of alcohol, and the other one said that, you know, a legally responsible adult can have a drink with a dinner.
Well, no. The way the bill is worded currently, it is that that you can't consume, and that consumption is prohibited. That's the way the bill is worded. That's every iteration of the bill that has gone forward. since this has even been started to, has included that prohibition. So that, not to be any confusion about that, if the bill passes, anybody who has a license to carry a concealed handgun would be able to go into the premises, assuming it wasn't otherwise posted and prohibited, but you would not be able to consume. That's the way the law is currently proposed. That's the way it was passed through the Senate. And if it passes through the House, I suspect that would be the way it would get, that would probably not get changed.
Right. But what the other gentleman was saying is, if we were able to change that until you could have one drink, I think it would be easier to pass in the future if there was a defining limit on what you could drink.
I agree with that. My point was, this is Jeff speaking, I'm the police officer, and I think what we had is a philosophical difference between Mark and I. As a law enforcement officer, and as a person who very much supports concealed carry, I think the easiest way to get the initial passage of the bill is to have it with no consumption. And then later on, if we decide, or if the legislature, through the prompting of the citizens, decides to make a change to that, it'll be easier to make the change to say that if the level is going to change from no consumption to impairment, then it would be easier to make that change, I guess, upward than it would be to try to get the issue of impairment included in the current language and pass the initial bill, which I don't think there's any attempt at doing. And I think the discussion earlier, and maybe some of the confusion was, I think we should just move forward with supporting the bill as it currently is worded. And Mark is more of the belief that it might not be a bad idea. And he personally doesn't have a problem with the standard being impairment, not impaired versus no consumption. Whereas I think it's much easier, and in my mind makes it more commonsensical that we just go with no consumption and then worry about the rest later, because the whole issue here is personal safety. The bottom line is, anybody that carries a concealed weapon in conjunction with their permit or their license, they're saying that I want to be able to carry it because I recognize that inside a bar, inside a restaurant that serves alcohol, I'm just as vulnerable as I am anywhere else, and therefore I'm going to protect myself and protect other people. That's the core issue.
And not just in the restaurant or the bar, but also going from your vehicle to the restaurant and back out. There have been several situations where people have been assaulted in a parking lot. And the other possibility is that if you leave your firearm locked in a vehicle and somebody steals the vehicle or breaks into the vehicle and then they have access to your firearm, it's in far less secure situation there than it is if it's on your person. I also, by the way, just to clarify, I don't say that we should change this law to remove that restriction, because I mean, I recognize the reality. Although I'm a Second Amendment absolutist, I'm also kind of a pragmatist, and I recognize that it's not going to get passed with that in there on the first iteration. That's why I was talking about the incrementalism that took stuff away. Yeah, we can chip it back and put them back in place incrementally as well. So I don't have a problem with that prohibition being in the current law. I disagree with it in a philosophical basis, but I recognize that it's probably essential in order to get it in, and I'd much rather have the ability to carry without having to commit the felony of existence while armed inside a restaurant that serves alcohol. And if that means I can't have a beer with my pizza, I can live with that. I don't have to like it, but I can live with it.
You know, one of the other issues that would come up with impairment, I just want to kind of reiterate what would happen with the concealed carry law. Same thing that would happen with driving under the influence law is this whole issue of impairment is subject to individual subjective intents. And maybe next week on the show, we'll be able to spend a little bit more time on that. But that can be very problematic.
Yeah, it absolutely can. Well, we're at the bottom of the hour, or the top of the hour. We're at the end of the show. And I want to thank everyone for joining and calling in, participating. Those of you who are listening online, welcome to Sim Trainer and Shooting from the Hip. We'll be back next week. Actually, I'll be gone, but Jeff will be here. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.